Support comes from Country Financial, hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois from December to March. Topics include updates on both the federal crop insurance program and the farm bill, as well as how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information is at countrycrop.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for January 13th, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the energy market with Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois. In agricultural news, crude oil futures continue to slide amid signs that OPEC will not adjust production levels before mid-year. We'll have that in other stories. Also, Todd Gleason and U of I ag economist Daryl Good crunched the numbers from yesterday's quarterly grain stocks report. And Don Day will have agricultural weather. It's all on the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Let's see how futures settled on this Tuesday afternoon. Hard red winter March wheat settled at 581 3/4, down 8 3/4. May, 586, down 9 1/2. Soft March wheat settled at 548, down 7 1/2. May, 552, down 8. March corn settled at 385 3/4, down 16 3/4. May, 393 1/2, down 16 1/2. July, $4 1/4, down 16 1/2. December, $4.12, down 14. January soybeans settled at $10, down 13 1/2. March, $10.04, down 12. July, $10.15 3/4, down 11. November, $9.86 3/4, down 7. March soybean meal settled at $3.33.60, down $7.60. March soybean oil settled at $32.54, down 6 cents. February live cattle settled at $157.45, down $3. January feeders, $221.47.5, down $192.5. And then February lean hogs, $75.30, they're down $1.35. And those are Tuesday's settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says Argentina will experience relatively good balance between rain and sunshine over the next 2 weeks. Some southwestern areas will be left a little too dry, but there should be some brief rainfall in the region to ease up on some of the stress. Brazil's weather outlook is mostly unchanged from yesterday. Net drying is expected from Mato Grosso do Sul and southern Mato Grosso to Bahia Espírito Santo, Minas Gerais, and northern Sao Paulo over the next 5 days. Totally dry weather is not expected, but daily high temperatures in the upper 80s and lower to middle 90s will evaporate most of the daily showers, producing up to 1/2 inch of moisture relatively quickly after its occurrence. Northern Mato Grosso crop areas and areas from Rio Grande do Sul into Paraná and southern Sao Paulo will see the highest frequency of rainfall through the weekend, with some benefit to crops. Meanwhile, a big warming trend is expected across the U.S. after today and Wednesday. Above average readings will occur in many areas from west to east across the nation. Highest temperatures late this week through early next week will peak in the 30s and 40s in the northern plains, 40s and 50s in the central plains and lower Midwest, and in the 50s and 60s in the Delta and southeastern states. Tickets are now on sale for the March 10th All-Day Ag Outlook meeting at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. The cost is $25 and includes a continental breakfast and a Beef House lunch. Sue Martin will deliver a keynote. Murray Wise will give us his projections for land values in 2015. And we'll have panels on corn, soybeans, and cash grain. And we may have a surprise or two along the way as well. You can get your tickets at this phone number, 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300. We take all major credit cards and we'll mail the tickets right out to you. Joining us on the phone to talk about the markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and he is in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
Everything is dripping in red.
It sure is. I'll tell you, this was not the day that we started out seeing early this morning, but it seems like once the people trading this morning tried the highs of Monday and couldn't break through, and with the corn, they started selling, and you know, we backed stuff off, and it just sort of multiplied on itself as we broke back through moving averages, started unwinding the corn bean spreads, the corn wheat spreads, and then closing below, you know, the 100-day and 50-day moving averages didn't put us in a very good spot for the way to end the day.
So where does this leave corn vulnerable to go?
Well, I think, you know, we're looking here at the corn, and I think that, you know, breaking through that 380 mark as far as the March corn goes takes us out of that trading range. We've been in the 380 to 420 trading range for a long time here, and as you know, as we look at the beans, I think, you know, as we look at those, the 991 level is the area that looks very vulnerable to us now.
So do you think corn might drift to 375 and try that level?
You know, it's going to depend on a couple things, Dave. Number one, if, you know, the funds were very long this market. We saw quite a bit of liquidation today. If it stays down here, it's self-fulfilling in their needs that technically they break above things and they continue to buy. Are they going to be that way on the downside? If so, 375 is within reach.
And in the soybeans, $10 has held on at least three previous opportunities.
Yeah, you know, we're looking mainly at the March with January going off the board tomorrow, mm-hmm. but 10.04 and a half here today, not a long trip to break through $10, but it'll be on a closing basis, and we don't want to be looking at that. But it is just a little bit risky here along that way. Now, the one thing, the funds aren't near as long the beans as they are the corn.
So what do you think was the impetus for the unwinding of these spreads today?
Well, I think that basically when we couldn't take out the highs after a friendly report yesterday, when we stopped and thought about the corn as far as the ethanol usage, we upped the corn for ethanol usage on really not a good ratio between corn or the ethanol and the unleaded. We're starting to build stocks. And that way. Now, we did talk about the one bank that put out the notice that said we will probably be using, it will be positive ethanol at low crude prices because people will be driving more and we've got our 10% mandate. But all in all, it looks like stocks are continuing to build here.
So I suppose you received a lot of phone calls from hedgers wondering what next.
Yeah, we did. And, you know, we've got some stuff hedged for the new year. We don't have as much as we'd really like to have hedged. It's sort of a bad time to be pushing into some of these other future hedges. A lot of people feeling that we could have got up in that close to the 440 level basis, the December 15 corn. You know, we're sitting just about 30 cents away from that now. And without some weather, why, it's going to be awful hard to creep back up there. But a lot of time, a lot of weather yet in South America to get this crop in. And how much of the second crop corn will we get planted down there? If that doesn't happen, we might see a little bit of a bounce back there. Is China going to come back in and buy at these lower levels? You know, a lot of times after big sell-off, we'll see a little pricing come in from there.
Now, the news we got out of China was that they put the kibosh on U.S. imports of poultry.
Yeah, eggs and chicken, didn't they? You know, a little bit of bird flu out west, and they just stopped that immediately along the way. And a little bit of just wondering if that was more of a game rather than making sure it was just inspected well.
I was trying to sort out to what might have been going on a political basis, and I couldn't come up with something.
Well, you know, maybe it is just that they are awful fussy with a lot of things over there. We've seen that with the GMO products and some of that, too. You know, one thing we've got to look forward to later this week, on Thursday, it looks like Inform is going to issue their 2015 acreage and productions at 10:30 in the morning. So that's going to be a big thing to look at and see if their numbers sort of match up with what the government just said here.
And then we're also going to probably get a pretty decent number out of NOPA for crush.
Yeah, and, you know, we continue to have a very large crush. We still have some problems with Malaysian palm oil as far as coming along because of the flooding that's, you know, pushed harvest back and that. So that's one of the things that could possibly, you know, give us a little strength to bounce back out of here.
Thank you much, Wayne.
Thanks, Dave.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
In agricultural news, the energy minister for the United Arab Emirates today says that his country is concerned about the balance in the oil market, but added that OPEC does not plan to shift its strategy to shore up falling crude prices, adding the organization will likely wait until its next meeting in June before considering any change in strategy. OPEC decided at its last meeting in November to keep its production levels unchanged. China has banned imports of U.S. poultry and eggs following the detection of avian flu in non-commercial flocks in the U.S. late last year. The ban follows the discoveries last month of a strain of H5N8 influenza in wild birds and in a so-called backyard flock of guinea hens and chickens in Oregon, as well as the detection of another strain in California and Washington. China's ban affects shipments of breeding stock, including live chicks and hatching eggs, as well as poultry and eggs. In the first 11 months of last year, U.S. exports of chicken, turkey, and duck products to China reached nearly $290 million. A new Associated Press GFK poll says that a large majority of Americans support labeling of genetically modified foods. 66% of Americans favor requiring food manufacturers to put labels on products that contain GMOs or foods grown from seeds engineered in labs. Only 7% are opposed to the idea, and 24% are neutral. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
The January USDA commodity crop reports are out. Todd Gleason reports in some four reports put a positive spin on the price of corn and reflect a more negative tone for soybeans.
Taken together, the reports are slightly supportive for corn prices and slightly negative for soybean prices, writes Darrell Good in his Monday weekly outlook letter that can be found online at the Farm Doc Daily website. That's farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. He says it is the nearly 2 million acre reduction in winter wheat seedings that may point to another large increase in soybean acreage this coming season, and that should weigh on the market until at least the end of March.
We think, taken together, that the reports are slightly friendly for corn. Certainly, we will want to watch the pace of consumption to make sure we are on track to meet USDA projections. But the lower year-ending stocks, I think, will provide some support for corn, and I would expect that prices for the year will average in the upper end of the USDA's projection. Soybean numbers might have been interpreted as slightly bearish for soybeans, even though December 1 stocks were smaller than expected. The Brazilian crop estimate was increased by 55 million bushels. That perhaps will weigh on the market later in the year. The other thing that may weigh on the soybean market is the nearly 2 million acre reduction in winter wheat seedings that might lead to expectations of even more soybean acreage here in the U.S. next year. So taken together, I would expect that soybean prices for the year will average perhaps in the lower half of the USDA's projected range.
USDA and the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report, or WASD figures, put those ranges from $3.35 to $3.95 a bushel for corn and $9.45 to $10.95 a bushel for old crop soybeans. The National Agricultural Statistics Service, or NAS, also released the final estimates of the size of the 2014 U.S. corn and soybean crops and estimates of the stocks of corn and soybeans in storage as of December the 1st, 2014.
On the production side, the USDA estimated the size of last year's crop at just over 14.2 billion bushels. That's almost 200 million bushels less than the November forecast and about 130 million bushels less than the market expected. The change in the production estimate primarily reflected a change in the yield estimate for the U.S. That yield is now estimated at 171 bushels, 2.4 bushels less than the November forecast, and about 2.3 bushels less than the market had expected. We did see fairly large yield changes in a number of states, with large declines coming in the western Corn Belt and the northern Midwest, where harvest was delayed because of a very poor weather.
December 1 corn stocks were estimated at 11.203 billion bushels. That's some 750 million larger than stocks of a year ago, and 80 million bushels larger than the average trade guess. Based on Census Bureau estimates, corn exports during the first quarter of the 14-15 marketing year totaled about 408 million bushels, 58 million more than exported during the same quarter last year. And based on EIA estimates of ethanol production, total domestic processing uses of corn during the quarter totaled 1.617 billion bushels, some 71 million bushels up from use a year earlier. Implied feed and residual use of corn during the quarter totaled some 2.225 billion bushels. That's down about 91 million bushels from the revised first quarter use of a year ago. And for the year, the USDA projection of marketing year exports was unchanged at 1.75 billion bushels, with no significant changes in production estimates for the rest of the world. The projection of ethanol use of corn was increased some 25 million bushels to 5.175 billion bushels, but the projection of feed and residual use was lowered 100 million bushels to 5.275. First quarter feed and residual use of corn represents some 42% of the projected use for the year. That is well below, writes Daryl Good, the average of 46.9% in the previous 2 years, but still above the 39.7% average over the 6 years prior to that. Year-ending stocks of corn are now projected at 1.877 billion bushels, 121 million less than last month's projection and 50 million bushels less than the average trade guess. The 2014 U.S. soybean crop, now estimated at 3.969 billion bushels, is 11 million larger than the November forecast and 13 million bushels larger than the average trade guess. The estimate of 2014 planted and harvested acreage for soybeans was reduced some 483,000 and 342,000 acres respectively, but the estimate of U.S. average yield was increased by 0.2 bushels to the acre and now stands at 47.8 bushels. The large production estimate was offset by a 10 million bushel increase in export projections for soybeans, so the year-ending stocks are still projected at 410 million bushels, or 11.2%. projected consumption. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the energy markets is Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon.
It's all about the oil these days, is it not?
Oh, it certainly has shaded a lot of markets to the downside here, and I think some of these other markets, which had generally gone against the trend, finally caved in even today. We saw some big pressure on the grains. The copper was off as much as 12 cents. The crude oil actually coming back late is up right now 25 cents. It closed pretty much at 18 cents. on the NYMEX today.
So I guess people are wondering if production is not curtailed in OPEC until June, how low can we go?
Well, I think we're looking at a situation where you got to be patient. A lot of people keep talking about the adjustments being made, but there's a long lead time in terms of those adjustments, both on the supply and demand side. You actually had many large projects started here over the past couple years in the Gulf of Mexico. They're looking at production actually reaching record highs this coming year. So those projects are not going to be abandoned and will actually be producing oil this coming year. On the demand side, certainly the demand is slow to react, a lot slower than it is to react on the upside. Certainly people do not drive a lot more in reaction to the higher or lower prices, but instead will continue to stick by some of the habits they had when prices were high. We've seen a lot of damage in this market, and really since the first of the year, we've seen the crude market down 15, heating oil off 11%, gasoline's off 15%. Nat gas, though, the one bright spot a little bit is actually up 2%. Power, even, or electricity, is off about 11%. So we've had a lot of benefits coming into, I think, our producers out there in terms of these prices, how quickly they are responding to them. They have to look at their underlying costs, inputs, and things like that to really make some, I think, longer-term decisions on how they want to proceed.
Producers are probably looking at the diesel and scratching their heads and saying, why not falling in lockstep in the ratio of gasoline?
Well, the diesel is a little bit influenced by some of the current weather conditions, at least, that we've seen on the East Coast. That has held it up better. We have started to see the margins come down a little bit against the gasoline. And as some of the refining capacity increases that we see come on stream this coming year in the Far East, I think the diesel actually will start to respond a little bit harder than what we've seen in the gasoline.
To what degree has the OPEC strategy impacted fracking?
Well, it hasn't done a lot to it. This OPEC strategy is certainly going to cut back, and it has already cut back the capital expenditures in terms of outright production for the U.S. We're probably still going to see record highs in production levels this coming year. How quickly we see the cutbacks occur will be contingent on how long these prices are low.
Thank you much, Steve.
Thank you.
That's Steve Platt from Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois. In 2 minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. It's National Peach Melba Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1808, Salmon Portland Chase was born. He was Secretary of the Treasury under Abraham Lincoln, and later he served as Chief Justice. One of his lasting legacies was leading the court to determine the changed boundaries of state and federal relationships in the wake of the Civil War and untimely death of Lincoln. In 1833, President Andrew Jackson wrote his vice president a letter expressing his opposition to South Carolina's defiance of federal authority. The crisis began the previous November when South Carolina nullified a federal tariff that favored northern manufacturing over southern agriculture. Jackson feared the nullification might split the Union. In 1927, the U.S. and Mexico battled over oil interests. The land law, which the Mexican legislature designed to break up the large estates, restricted foreign land ownership in Mexico. The law alienated American oil corporations operating in Mexico and increased tensions between the two countries. And in 1957, the first Frisbee was produced. The pie tins of the Frisbee Pie Company of Connecticut have often been cited as the inspiration for the creation of the Frisbee. A WAMO employee supposedly saw drivers for the pie company showing Yale students how to sail their pie tins, which ultimately led to the invention. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
I am tired of cold weather, Don. I need some help. You got some help for me?
I do, but it's a little bit of good news and bad news for those of you who do not appreciate the cold. The good news is that we are going to see moderating temperatures, and we're going to start to see the Arctic air relax. We're going to get a little bit more in the way of Pacific air to move across the country for the rest of this week and into the start of next week. So we will see warmer weather. Bad news is I think we're going to go in reverse and see a pattern that's going to set up to bring a lot of the nation very cold weather again mid to late next week and right on through the end of January.
So that colder weather that will be coming will feel even colder than it is because we just had this moderating weather.
Well, exactly. And every time we get these warm-ups, it kind of resets everything to where the next cold wave always feels a little worse. But not unexpected. We're entering usually the coldest time of year, and exactly that's what's going to be happening. We do feel that late January and into the first part of February, what we see in the Pacific, what we see in the Atlantic and the higher latitudes is this indicating that there's more cold weather to come this winter.
Okay, so this warming trend probably will melt a lot of the snow. A lot of places there's not a lot of snow on the ground. If it turns as cold as you are advertising again, what does that mean for the wheat crop?
Well, we need to watch that, especially in the southern areas where there is not a lot of snow cover. Now, we do think that with the cold there will be some snow, so I think there is a possibility of getting snow cover before a severe cold comes on in, and that's something that we're going to be watching carefully. And we're also going to see some cold invade Europe. You're going to be hearing this in the news soon. Most of Europe is going to go and head towards some very cold weather here over the next week, and that could affect some of the wheat areas of Russia, eastern areas of Europe as well.
Turn your attention to South America. What are the weather conditions there?
Not bad. It does look a little drier in Brazil. I do see some rain in the green areas of Brazil, but they're going to see precipitation a little below normal. Argentina stands to have the best chance of picking up rain. Temperatures in South America, really nothing extraordinary, averaging close to normal. If there's any warm part of South America, it is the central and southern areas of Argentina.
Do we expect some net drying in areas, maybe Mato Grosso do Sul, Bahia, those kind of places?
There could be some net drying, although I don't think it'll be rapid drying, but there will be those areas you just mentioned are going to be a little drier.
What else are we keeping an eye on world conditions?
Well, you know, in terms of, you know, where we are, we're basically heading our right into the midwinter. And if we take a look at weather patterns right now in both hemispheres, I would say that things are going along about as expected. We do see a weakening El Nino, so I don't think that's going to be too much of a factor. And that's something that we're hoping that could hang on a little longer to help maybe bring later this month some California rain.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to subscribe to our free Aggie newsletter. You can do that at willag.org. Use the link in the right navigation window. And also, be sure to pick up your tickets to the All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. You can do that at 217-333-7300. This is Dave Dickey.